This is the Spencer Wilson Show.
Good snap, good hold, and the kick is blocked! Appalachian State has stunned the college football world, one of the greatest upsets in sports history.
Travis Ishikawa hits one in the right. The Giants win the pennant.
And here it is. The 37-year wait is over. American Pharoah is finally the one. American Pharoah has won the Triple Crown.
10 seconds left to go. The countdown. Cleared out. Out of the zone. The
the ball, recovers, trying to fight up a shot, blocked, loose ball, 1 second, and Nevada wins!
Oh! Oh!
A full throttle, stirred to a frenzy, they want the record. Tomlinson, off the left side, Tomlinson sidesteps, hello history books! Balotelli, Aguero! I swear you'll never see anything like this ever again!
Here's your host, Spencer Wilson.
What up? Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome inside ESPN Studios. You're listening to the Spencer Wilson Show. I'm your host, Spencer Wilson. On the board is Sean Cloud.
How's everyone doing?
And a lot to get to. Stanley Cup Finals, we'll talk that. NBA Finals, we'll talk Reno Aces. Ed Too Tall Jones going to join us on the broadcast today. But first, we got to start off with stories and headlines around the world of sports, and man, it was an interesting week. Some interesting stories. We'll start in the world of the NBA with one story that was just very, very out there. It's either been a very frustrating beyond belief week, or a week that made 76ers GM Brian Colangelo so nervous that he was on the point of a mental breakdown. So basically, there's a report coming out earlier this week that there are several burner accounts on Twitter that are supposedly linked to Colangelo. The 76ers organization has launched their own private investigation into the matter. Rumors are swirling that Colangelo will not keep his job after this. The tweets included comments on Colangelo's job execution, as well as comments on Joel Embiid's off-the-court behavior, Jahlil Okafor's injury issues that may have tarnished some trade opportunities, and Nerlens Noel being a problem in the locker room. And now the investigation's also taking on a certain focus on Colangelo's wife, that maybe she was a part of some of these burner accounts. And there are some wild speculations that former 76ers head man Sam Hinkie is also using these Twitter accounts to basically take shots at his former team. But we'll see as those investigations come along. And now more of a feel-good story surrounding a man that is a part of ownership for a team. Washington Capitals owner Ted Leonsis surprised 200 of his employees with a trip to Vegas for the first two games in the Stanley Cup. He chose 200 employees of Monumental Sports and Entertainment based on how closely they work with the Capitals, and also seniority, of course. And they received some email with some kind of tagline about going to Vegas, and they either received tickets for Game 1 or Game 2 of the Stanley Cup Finals. They were also put up in the Excalibur. That's fun. Leonsis is not the only owner in recent history to do something like this. Remember back in the 2016 World Series, when the Cubs and Indians met, Cubs owner Tom Ricketts paid for 400 full-time employees and their spouses to go to some games in Cleveland, while Indians owner Paul Dolan paid for 300 of his employees to go see some games in Chicago. And I think we can all guess who ended up happier out of that deal. Staying in the world of baseball, a tough start for the defending National League champion Los Angeles Dodgers, and things could be getting worse. Clayton Kershaw will have an MRI on his back after it tightened up on him during yesterday's game against Philadelphia. Kershaw will not travel with the team to Colorado. Manager Dave Roberts has confirmed that. Instead, he will remain in LA for some tests. Roberts had reported that there was some tightness coming in Kershaw's lower to mid-back area. Kershaw has also been dealing with some left bicep tendonitis this season. He threw just 62 pitches over five innings in yesterday's games. The Dodgers are just 2-6 in Kershaw's eight starts after a 23-4 year last season. Every fastball that he threw in this game was 90 miles an hour or slower. He did not do that on any of the fastballs he threw last year. Back injuries, of course, have really put a halt on Kershaw's career. He missed 75 days in 2016 and 39 days last season due to a back injury. And the Dodgers are fourth right now in the National League West, four games back of Colorado. And now a story that came out of the world of soccer that kind of caught everybody off guard. After three very successful years at the helm of Real Madrid, bringing home a La Liga title, which is the top club level title in Spain, and three UEFA Champions League titles, which is basically the Super Bowl of Europe, Zinedine Zidane has stepped down as the manager after just 2.5 years in the position. And it's not going to be an easy job to take over. Right now, the rumored frontrunner is current Tottenham manager Mauricio Pochettino. And the reason it's not going to be an easy job, one, you have to follow pretty much four major titles. And secondly, it's rumored that Cristiano Ronaldo is leaving the team because he wants to go back to Manchester United in England due to wanting to play with Jose Mourinho. So wow. If Ronaldo leaves and you got to follow Zidane, I mean, good luck to whoever's taking over that job. And tennis is in the midst of their second major of the season with the Aussie Open in the books. Roland Garros takes its turn as the French Open, the greatest show on clay, is in full swing. Three American women and two American men remain in the field that is in the process of being trimmed from 32 to 16. Madison Keys has advanced to the fourth round after beating Japan's Naomi Osaka in straight sets. Serena Williams and Sloane Stephens have yet to play their third round game. While second overall seed Caroline Wozniacki has advanced, and top seed Simona Halep has yet to play. On the men's side, John Isner, ranked ninth in the world, has yet to play his third-round matchup against Pierre Hughes Herbert in the third round, while Steve Johnson, who is unranked, will play Marin Cilic, ranked number three in the world in the third round. And the Women's College World Series is underway. The opening round of that competition is in the books, and much like the regional and super regional round before it, no real upsets. The top eight teams made it to the World Series. First time in a couple years that's happened. The last 2 years, there have been some monumental upsets in the super regional round. Number one Oregon and number two Florida were the big winners yesterday in their opening round. Oregon won 11-6 over Arizona State, and Florida won 11-3 over Georgia. It's the biggest Oregon win in series history when it comes to the World Series. UCLA also came from behind to beat Florida State 7-4, and Washington shut out the defending champion Oklahoma Sooners 2-0 to advance to the winner's bracket. And later today, Oregon will face Washington in that rivalry game. In the 1-0 winners bracket game, and then Florida will take on UCLA. And the college baseball tournament is in their regional round that got started today. Some of the top 16 seeds include Florida, Texas, Stanford, North Carolina, Texas Tech, the Mountain West champion San Diego State Aztecs. Very tough draw for them. They're going up to Corvallis. They'll play Oregon State. They'll play Northwestern State. They'll also play the defending runners-up from last year, LSU. So that's going to be a tough trip to Oregon for the Aztecs. And then an interesting story coming out of the world of football today. In Philadelphia, a fan that was accused of punching a police horse and the officer mounted on said horse is now filing a lawsuit against the Eagles and the Philadelphia police. So back, I believe it happened during the NFC Championship game, so the Eagles hadn't even won yet. They were probably up by like 20 points at this point. And so this whole altercation happens, and now Andrew Tornetta claims that he did nothing wrong and that he was beaten for no reason. And Tornetta is now filing a lawsuit. He filed it on Wednesday that alleges assault and battery by police, and he's seeking damages in excess of $50,000. He said that the result of his beating and his demonization in the media has caused him physical pain, discomfort, trauma, humiliation, embarrassment, emotional distress, and sleeplessness. The charges of resisting arrest and disorderly conduct were dropped against Tornetta after he completed 12 hours of community service and paid $222 in legal fees. The Eagles and city police have not commented on pending legal actions from Tornetta. That's just to punch a police horse.
Dude, you deserve to get it. I'd been like to the horse, just turn around and back kick him. You know?
Yeah, I mean, how do you get that confidence? I don't know. But now a story coming out about the Jamaican track and field team. It was announced yesterday that the Jamaican 4x100 team that won gold at the Beijing 2008 Summer Olympics had been officially stripped of those medals due to Nesta Carter's appeal for a positive drug test for a stimulant that I am not going to try and pronounce. Was dismissed by a court of arbitration for a sports judging panel yesterday. Carter ran the opening leg of the eventual world record run by Team Jamaica at that event, clocking a time of 37.10. And this, of course, ruins Usain Bolt's perfect 9 for 9 at the Olympic Games. Of course, he has gold in the 100 and 200 in 2008, 12, and 16. And now he will only have the 4x1 gold in 2012 and 2016. I believe Trinidad and Tobago were awarded that gold medal. And last but not least, if you've been anywhere in Northern Nevada, if you listen to Brian Smudio and Alex Margulies on the show before us, then you are well aware that not only did Nevada snag Jordan Brown this offseason, but the Martin twins are coming on home for one more year. And yes, that was what's going through everybody's mind right now. They're 4, 5, and 6 in different national rankings, and it's just going to be a whole lot of fun next year rooting for the Wolfpack. All right, that's the stories and headlines from around this week in sports. When we come back after the break, Ed Too Tall Jones will be on the phone. That coming up next, you're listening to the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio.
Welcome back to the Spencer Wilson Show.
All righty, welcome back inside the studio. And I got the privilege of earlier this week and getting to talk to a very special man. His name is Ed Too Tall Jones, and this is how the conversation sounded. Joining me on the phone now, Super Bowl champion and 3-time Pro Bowler, Mr. Ed Too Tall Jones. Ed, thank you very much for taking some time to talk to me today. How's your day going?
My day going great. Thank you for having me.
You'll be up here in Reno this weekend for the Legends of the Game event that's happening at the Lake Ridge Golf Course. It's 4 days of golf and an event. It's going to be a lot of fun. Have you had a chance to ever play this Lake Ridge course here in Reno before, or is this going to be a first for you?
No, this is an event that I pencil in every year. I've been involved. I may have missed 1 year since Mr. Hampton started this years ago when he started it in California. I love, first of all, I love being involved in anybody that have organizations that give back to the community, and that's what this does. And I told Sonny, I said, you know, anytime you have events going on like this, make sure you contact me. And I love being involved. I also love the fact that some of the greatest athletes to ever play the game in all sports, not just football, but basketball, boxers, all participate in this event. And I look forward to seeing them every year. And a lot of them I only see once a year, and that's this Legends event.
Yeah, it's awesome. This is a fun event. It's been around for it feels like a long time just from the impact that it's made. Did you get into golf at an early age, or was it something you picked up kind of later in adulthood, or when did you kind of get into this sport?
No, I got into it at a late age, and I hate that because I had an opportunity to get involved in golf when I was a kid growing up on a farm in Tennessee. But, you know, we had baseball fields, we had basketball courts, we had all those different things. I didn't play football early on because my high school didn't have a football team. But I played a lot of basketball and baseball, and some of the instructors there would ask my friends and I to come out and play some golf. And you know, we didn't have time for it, or we wouldn't make time for it. And I really hate that because I think when you start early and develop those muscle memories, it makes all the difference in the world in golf. Golf is a lot, one of the most difficult sports to pick up that I've ever gotten involved in. But I got involved in golf because of charities like this. I kept getting asked to come out and participate, and I kept saying, well, I come out, but I won't golf. Well, I was out there taking photos and signing autographs all day, so I just started putting. and I made a few putts that brought me back. Then I picked up a driver, and I'd make one swing that would keep me coming back, and I got hooked, and I absolutely love the game now.
Is there a course that you've played that's your favorite? Do you have like a go-to course that you enjoy playing?
My favorite is Shadow Creek in Vegas, and the only way I can describe Shadow Creek is if you were to go on vacation and send photos back to your family and friends, every hole would be a photo that you would want to send it to your family and friends. But I've been blessed with the opportunity to play golf not only in the United States but abroad as well. I mean, I've been to the home of Golf St. Andrews and played all those courses over there where they play the British Open, and I played just about every course in the United States that's on most people's wanted list. But for some reason, Shadow Creek just fit my eye. I absolutely love that place. When you're playing it, the hole you play in, you don't see another hole. So it's just kind of you and your friend enjoying all that beauty. And whether you shoot a good round or a bad round, you have a great time.
That's awesome. Yes, golf's a very technical sport. Everything, the smallest movement can change your shot. And it's not uncommon to see football players and basketball players cross over and play golf. But I was a little surprised when I was doing some research to find that you had a brief boxing career. I believe you went 6-0 with 5 knockouts. That's pretty impressive.
Boxing is my favorite sport. Have always been. Like I said, I grew up in Tennessee on a farm. And in Tennessee, all the young kids want to be like their parents. And I was no different. And my dad was a big fight fan and NASCAR fan. And I got involved in both. And so, but boxing have always been my favorite, still is to this day. And even after playing for the Dallas Cowboys, which was my favorite team growing up, I knew in the back of my mind I had to pursue that dream. I didn't want to be 40 or 50 years old, never have an opportunity to do what I really wanted to do. So after I played 5 years with Dallas, 5 years, 3 Super Bowls, I said, hey, you know, the time is right now. And I did. I pursued that dream and had 1 year, 6 fights in 1 year, which is unheard of.
That's a lot.
And got out of it for reasons that I haven't told anyone outside of family. But it got that elephant off my back. And when I came back 10 more years, it was probably 10 of the best years of my life.
Do you have a fight, any one of those 6 fights that really stands out in your mind that you remember and really is kind of vivid, or just the whole experience?
Oh, the first one went the distance. Like I said, I had 6 fights, 5 I knocked out. The first one went the distance. And what's funny about it, what stands out about it is I was still learning the game. And if you know anything about boxing, one of the most important things is to be able to cut off the ring, meaning if you're fighting a fighter that has quick feet, a lot of good movement, in order to offset that, you have to be able to cut off the ring, just like in football, when you're in pursuit on defense of a running back, that you have to just keep a 45-degree angle on him and just let him come to you, just wait on him and make the play. Well, in boxing, it's the same thing. That's the one thing I hadn't learned. So we decided to go with a fighter who was a good fighter. He was a knockout puncher, and we felt he would be there toe-to-toe, and that's what I wanted. Well, he chose to run, and he made me look very awkward because, again, the one thing I hadn't learned, which is one of the most important, was how to cut off the ring.
Right.
And so that's the one that stick out in my mind most.
Is there a boxer that, you know, today that you really enjoy watching? Do you have a favorite boxer that's fighting today?
I like, to be honest with you, win or lose, I like a good fight. That's what I like.
Yeah.
Like matchmakers and promoters who put together good fights, and it doesn't matter what weight class. Now, of course, I love the heavyweights. That's what got me interested. Because back when I was growing up, you had a lot of great heavyweights.
Yeah.
Not just Ali and Sonny Liston and Floyd Patterson, those guys, a lot of them. Ernest Shaver, Larry Holmes, one of my favorite, also one of my good friends. A lot of good fighters. So I wish that division would come back, but it's tough because most kids that grow up today want to be a basketball player or a football player. Well, particularly football, if you grow up playing football and now they got these kids in the weight room when they in junior high school, lifting more weights than I lift by the time I was in college. You developing all the wrong muscles. Football boxers have to have long, lean muscles in order to have those that quick hand speed. And so it's hard to get into football and then decide all of a sudden you want to become a boxer because you developed all the wrong muscles. So it's a sport that I'm concerned with as far as longevity, especially in the heavyweight and light heavyweight division. You will always have the good welterweights and guys at those smaller divisions because most of those guys don't feel that they can play basketball or football. So I will always be a fan. And like I said, win or lose, I enjoy watching a good fight. I don't have a favorite right now.
Okay. And you you mentioned being around Larry Holmes, obviously a very famous heavyweight champion. You yourself a champion in your own right, winning Super Bowl XII with the Cowboys. And knowing what it takes, what that season feels like to win a Super Bowl championship, do you think that this year's Cowboys can be contenders in what's shaping up to be a tough Eastern division?
What I hope is that, number one, they're able to stay healthy. You know, people ask me what I think about the Cowboys and their roster all the time. Well, I can't make a good judgment until, number one, no suspensions.
Yeah.
Number two, guys are healthy and on the field. That's the only way you can evaluate them. We've had bad luck here the past 5-6 years with guys not being able to stay on the field. And I'm talking about key players that we need to have to have to win. And then seem like when things are rolling and you turn things around, here come a suspension. So those are my concerns, and those are the things that I talk to the players about. I don't get involved a lot with the current players. I think that they have a good coaching staff there, and they do a good job. They working with those guys. But when I do run into them, two things I mentioned to them. And number one, how important character is. You know, how not only how you conduct yourself on the field, but off the field and in the community. And number two, win your home games. Make Dallas Stadium a home field advantage. Have it where, when I played, I often talked to players during the offseason who would say the first thing they would do when they looked at their schedule was to see, when are we going to Dallas? They knew it was going to be a war. You didn't come off in our stadium when I played and beat us. And if you win your home games and steal a couple on the road, you're in the playoffs. Once you're in the playoffs, just like Philly proved last year, anything can happen.
Absolutely. And before I let you go, Ed, I have one more question for you. It was announced last week, so it's a little bit of older news, but just curious if you have any thoughts or comments on the anthem policy that the NFL announced last week.
Well, first of all, number one, I like the fact that the owners are financially supporting a lot of the causes, the reason why all of this started in the first place. I like the fact that they own board with the players when it comes to that. Number two, if I was playing today, whatever my suggestion would be if I was one of the captain or one of the players would be, whatever we do, we're going to do it as a team. We won't have individuals doing one thing, one person doing this, other person doing that. Whatever we would do, we'd be united. And that would be what I would suggest and the avenue that I would take if I was playing today.
Yeah, that's very true. It's how it all started, just banding together and really caring about one another. Well, thank you very much.
You know, I've often –
Oh, go ahead.
Thank you so much for having me, and I look forward to this weekend in Reno.
Yeah, please enjoy your time here. Enjoy your stay. It's going to be some beautiful weather for you this weekend, and I want to thank you again for taking some time today to talk to me, and hopefully we can do it again soon.
Sounds good. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ed. Big thanks again to Ed Tuttle Jones for taking some time to talk to me. Really appreciated it, and just a great guy. Playing golf right now. I didn't receive the name of the winner who won, but I'm sure he or she is out there right now having a blast. How could you not? The guy was super friendly and just a great guy to talk to. So we're going to take a break, but before we do that, Sean, we got something for the people.
We got a pair of tickets to see Styx and Joan Jett and the Blackhearts with Tesla at the Toyota Amphitheater tomorrow, June 2nd.
So call in now. Caller number 9 gets the tickets. 775-333-0945, I believe, is the number. Caller number 9, it's all yours. We're talking Aces and Stanley Cup Finals when we come back. This is the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio.
Welcome back to the Spencer Wilson Show.
Yeah, welcome back inside the studio. Big congratulations to Nathan Dewitt, who went ahead and did it and won the competition. He got the Styx tickets, and a happy early birthday to Nathan. It's
happy
his birthday tomorrow. So what?
Tomorrow.
What a way that panned out for Nathan. Congratulations, my man. So. Before we went to break, we said that we would talk Aces and Stanley Cup. We're going to talk about the Aces first because for a team that's been kind of up and down this year, they came off of a very, very tough road stretch, I believe, playing Albuquerque, Fresno, and then Salt Lake.
It was devastating.
Tough teams, and it was a road trip that you could see going very south. Unfortunately, just the way that they've been up and down this year, you didn't really know what to expect, but just that inconsistency made you a little nervous. And unfortunately, they ended off their road trip dropping 4 out of 5 in Salt Lake. They had been going pretty well. I think they were 4-4, I think, or 4-5 going into Salt Lake.
Yeah, they're about 4-4 going into Salt Lake.
4-4, and which again, 500 on a long road trip. I mean, that's okay. We'll take that based on how the season's been going. And then just a tough series really in Salt Lake. They dropped the first 3, 6-9, 8-11, and 2-7. And Sean, you were working most of those games.
Yeah, it was just they weren't playing their game. They were playing Salt Lake's game, or they were playing Fresno's game. They weren't playing their game. Our starting pitching started off great sometimes. Sometimes it didn't.
There have been struggles there.
But we have after Salt Lake, I just see us going into this Vegas series, and we've been doing so well.
Yeah, they were able to squeak out a 6-1 win in the fourth game of that Salt Lake series. They did lose 3-5 in the finale, but they kept it competitive there. They went 5-8 on the road trip, but as you just alluded to, Sean, they've come back home to Greater Nevada Field, hosting their rivals Vegas, and have looked really good. In these first two games, they went on to win. I think it was 8-5 on Wednesday in the opener, and they hung a 5 spot on them in the fifth inning. And really, it's come down, it seems like, to one big inning either way. Mm-hmm. Whether they lose, they give up a big inning, or they have a big winning that propels them to a victory. It's gone one of those two ways. They had, I think, 4 different batters hit a home run.
Yeah, 4 home runs.
And only 4 strikeouts, too.
Yeah.
And that's been a big issue as well. They've been getting guys on base, but that strikeout problem of not being able to really either get him into scoring position or get him home has really ailed them. So they had only 4 strikeouts and 4 home runs. And I believe a man by the name of Callis? Callis? Cal? I don't know.
I can't
pronounce
it.
Come on, Sean. How do you pronounce it?
Jose something.
Okay. But he he took his first, I think it was his first at-bat for the Reno
his
Aces.
First bat in AAA baseball.
And I think it went pretty well.
Went like this, actually.
Aaron looks in to get the sign. Here comes the windup and the first pitch. And Kaliz swings it. It's a high drive into left center field. Back goes Kaczmarski racing to the warning track, looking up at the fence. And it is gone. Jose Kaliz has hit a home run. His first AAA long ball gives the Aces a 1-0 lead.
So there you have it, Kaliz hitting his first home run and then really kind of propelled them in that game to kind of get that feel-good moment, especially coming back home and playing Vegas.
Yeah, we had 3 other home runs, a Marzilli home run, a Vargas home run. I can't remember the last home run. I'll remember it one day. But either way, it was a great to come home and for them to win that game and get hits and get a good pitching staff going, and everything else started working for them. And then going into game 2 was just...
And yeah, speaking of getting hits, they had 21 team hits in game 2 yesterday against Vegas, racking up a 20-3 win. And that's really... the explosive offense that we saw a lot last year.
Yeah.
We worked several games, you and I both did, where they got into the high teens or even the low 20s like that, and it wasn't really something that caught you by surprise last season, but seeing that number this year, you really go, wow, that's a darn good day for the Aces.
Exactly.
Crone hit a 3-run home run, only home run in that game for the Aces, but it was a big one, which just shows you those 21 hits driving in 17 other runs. That it's tough to beat any team who can do that. But another big thing, talk about holding the strikeouts down to a minimum, holding the errors down. They had zero errors in last night's game. You're going to put yourself in good positions if you can hit balls and commit no errors, because we've seen time and time again either they claw back into a game that they're down early in, or they're struggling to try and keep a lead and it's an error. Here they either a wild throw or someone just drops the ball or it eats them up, just a play they shouldn't or they should make that they can't. And when you see a team that now sets themselves up getting hits, getting guys in, and doesn't commit an error, that's a winning baseball team. That's how you win games. And that's how we're used to seeing the Aces play.
Yeah.
So it's good to see. I mean, sometimes all it takes is a series or two to get your mojo back, get a good feeling. And right now, this Vegas series is taking the shape of something that could help this team get a little more confidence and get that kind of swagger back that they've had these last couple seasons.
Yeah, and coming off of Memorial Day, everyone says, you know, when we hit Memorial Day, now we can actually say, are these people good? Are they bad? What do we expect? Coming in, at first I kind of thought, you know, the Salt Lake, oh no, we're at that point where we think we're going to lose this year. Coming back home and seeing the dominance that they've been putting on Vegas makes me believe that we could have a playoff run this year.
Yeah, absolutely. It's always it's two different halves of the season. So even if this half the season isn't going great, you can try to make up some ground that second half. So you're never really out of it. But Memorial Day is that first kind of gut check of the season for everybody, minor league and major league.
Yep.
So it's been interesting to see that. And again, hopefully this is a series that gives the Aces a little bit of confidence and they can just kind of move on with their chest and their heads a little bit higher. So now let's move on to a series that's also two games in. And that's the Stanley Cup Finals. And these first two games, oh my gosh, these first two games. First off, hats off to the Vegas and their pregame ceremonies.
Oh my God.
I mean, they just know how to do it in Sin City when it comes to pregame festivities. I mean, concerts to a night battle on the ice.
Mm-hmm.
And I've said it to you. I've said it to my sister and my parents and just everybody that'll listen to me. I don't know who initially came up with the idea of projecting things on the ice. That was genius, because it is so cool all the different ways they can do that. And you said there was something in – and what was it, game one that stood out to you? I missed pregame festivities in game one. I got
game
to see him in game
one,
two.
If you saw game two, it was kind of similar to game two's pre-opening. You know, they had all the teams that were in the playoffs on the ice, and then they had, you know, these girls come out and arrows being lit on fire, fake fire, of course. And then they started shooting them at the ice, and everyone's like, oh, this is going to be intense. Well, it lights a fire ring and kind of like burns all of the flags and just leaves the Knights and the Capitals there. And then the lady on the thing's like, and then there was two.
Oh, man.
And I'm sitting there like getting goosebumps.
Yeah.
I was just, oh my God, this is insane.
It'll send shivers down your spine every time you see it. And what I love about these first two games is it's just been hustle.
Mm-hmm.
Like for 60 minutes, both teams just been going at it. And really that's what the Stanley Cup Finals are all about, just pure animosity from the puck drop to the final buzzer. And game one, really tales of two different games. Game one was way more of an offensive shootout. We were tied 2-2 after one. We were tied 3-3 after two. And it was really back and forth. And Washington comes out and scores the first goal of the third period. And when it's 4-3, Washington's got to feel good. Oh, man. But if again, it's that always that itch in the back of your mind. Are they gonna not be able to close it out? I mean, I know I've talked about this a lot, but those first two games against Columbus, how they could not close it out. And you got to wonder if that ever comes back around. And it did, because Vegas ended the game scoring three in a row. One, of course, was an empty netter. So you take that with a grain of salt. But still, scored three straight and won the game 6-4.
Go Knights.
Yeah, you don't see a whole lot of high-scoring first games. There hasn't really been one. I think the one that I remember most was back in 2010. Chicago and Philly had a 6-5 game.
Right.
So, but you don't really see high scoring games coming out of the gate that often, especially against two goalies that as of late have done really well. I mean, Marc-Andre Fleury the whole postseason has been great, and then Brendan Holtby in those last two games against Tampa Bay were really good. And game two, Holtby managed to make a save that just doesn't make any sense, people. So I think it was 4-3. 3-2. I think it was 3-2. Washington was up one goal. That's really all you need to know. And literally half of the net of Washington was wide open, and then Holtby does this.
2:05 to go. Fleury at the edge of the crease, and now the hash marks as it's still back in. It's set a close. Oh, it didn't go. It was tucked with a wide open net.
I mean, I stood up and yelled at my screen. My sister did, her boyfriend did, everybody at my house did. It was only the three of us. But you see this wide open net. Vegas just getting ready to slap this thing in to the point where it's going to break the net in the back of the goal. And all of a sudden, it just drops in front of the red line. And you look at the replay, and Holtby somehow managed to get like the knuckles of his glove that were holding on to his hockey stick like on the puck, and then it caught his stick, and I don't know how he did it, but
I don't think I've ever seen anyone like block it with their stick hand before like
I don't,
that.
Like, I don't,
and he was literally like, it's not like it was just like a half open net. He was around the corner looking at the other guy that had the
puck.
He
was like on his stomach.
And then as he shot it, he like turned and hurt. I don't even know.
It was amazing. It was flat out amazing. And so this was a big win for Washington in a couple ways. One, they stole one on the road in Vegas, so you're tied up 1-1 going back tomorrow night to play Game 3 in your home arena, so that's got to make you feel good. It was also the first Stanley Cup final win for the Washington franchise. They were 0-4. This is only their second appearance. They got swept the first time they were in the finals. They were 0-4. They lost Game 1, so they were 0-5. So this is now their first win. They're now 1-5 overall, and also the first win they have against Vegas. Because they lost the two regular season meetings to Vegas, 3-0 in Sin City, and then 4-3 in the nation's capital. So this wasn't just a stage of the game that Washington had yet to really, you know, figure out. This was a team that Washington had yet to figure out. And now that they've done that, they've done it in Vegas, they've kind of conquered a few different demons, I feel like, in this game, and it completely changed the landscape of the Stanley Cup final. I mean, I picked Vegas in 7, so I'm not surprised that it's tied 1-1 after two games, but honestly, I thought they would trade two games. I thought Vegas would win both at home, Washington would win both games at their place, and the last three would be just kind of toss-ups. But I'm excited to see what's around the corner when it comes to Game 3, which again is going to be tomorrow night in Washington.
It's going to be exciting.
It's going to be fantastic. I'm going to be interested to see if Washington can hang with Vegas's pregame.
Yeah, I'm all about these pregames.
I mean,
right,
it's going to be tough to live up to that, man.
I don't know what Washington could do. We're just gonna fly.
Yeah, I'm not sure what they're going to do, but it's going to be a tough act to follow.
Yeah.
I think. We're back on the pregame just because it's so I don't know how to describe it.
If you haven't seen it yet, it is on YouTube right now.
Yes, you should go check it out on YouTube.
Go check out Game 1 and Game 2, and I recommend you watch Game 2's first, then go back to Game 1.
Yeah, oddly enough, it kind of would help you.
Yeah,
in that, watch it in that sequence.
It helped us.
Yeah, it made us enjoy it a little bit more.
Yeah.
But again, that's Game 3 will be tomorrow night. I believe it'll be on NBC. If not, it would be on NBC Sports Network, one of the two. NBC will be broadcasting the Stanley Cup Finals, so tune into that. And again, if you want to listen to the Aces all year can be heard on our sister station, 6:30 a.m. with the silky smooth pipes of Ryan Radke calling all the action. My voice just cracked for some reason.
Not silky smooth there.
Oh, my gosh. No, that was a little rough around the edges. We're going to take our last commercial break, and when we come back from break, what exactly will these finals mean for LeBron James? We'll talk about that. This is the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio.
Welcome back to the Spencer Wilson Show. It's time for My Two Spence Worth.
2-for-2 on that, Ann. Very nice. It is time for My Two Spence Worth. And today, since we're in the midst of the NBA Finals, for the fourth straight year, it's Cleveland and it's Golden State. And there's been a lot of talk, obviously, always talk surrounding LeBron James. Will he stay in Cleveland? Sean and I both have in agreement that we think he won't stay in Cleveland.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to stay.
Especially after last night, just because it feels like – it feels like the thing that was keeping this legend of LeBron alive was a championship to Cleveland. Like that first stint that he was there before he went to Miami, he brought him to the finals that one year. They got swept by Duncan and the Spurs, and of course he went to Miami. And then coming back to Cleveland, this it felt like – the legend of LeBron surrounds bringing a championship back to Cleveland.
I just feel like he's like planning for his Space Jam a little bit early here. The movie that he's gonna be in the new Space Jam.
Yeah, I saw that.
And
yes.
It just feels like this, you know, 51 points, almost half.
They scored 114, so he basically scored almost half their own points. I mean, no one else. There are two other players in double digits.
You can't even find him. That says a lot.
Well, yeah. Well, J.R. Smith had 10 points. And then it says Kevin Love had 21. And it's just, yeah. I mean, that's there you go. So there's a 30-point difference between LeBron James and the next highest scoring guy on his team. 30-point difference. I mean, when you have one guy that's scoring half your team's points, and then all you ask of one teammate when he gets a rebound 4 feet from the basket is just to put it back up, and he sprints towards half court like the basket's on fire. I mean, it's if you're going to look up and check the clock, wouldn't you see the score? Like, I mean, we can surround this all day with what J.R. Smith was thinking. I still don't know. I did a lap around my kitchen when I saw him do it because I was trying to just, like, piece together how do you get a rebound 4 feet from the basket and wind up, like, 40 feet from the basket? I don't get it. And LeBron's face will become a meme. It's going to become a meme soon.
It already is, I'm sure.
When he's just looking at J.R. with his hands in the air, like, what on earth
do
were you
doing?
Do
you think you're on Golden State?
Like,
or
what?
Are you on the Cavaliers? Let's be real.
So there's video. I mean, all the lip readers in the world broke it down. You can see J.R. Smith telling LeBron, I thought we had the lead. And then he tells the media after the game that he thought Coach Lou was going to call a timeout. And you have Coach Lou saying, I don't know what he was doing. LeBron, actually, after a reporter asked him, I think, 5 or 6 times about J.R. Smith, just got up and left.
Yeah, he just walked out. He's like,
I'm
done
with it.
And you
can understand that because you have a player that's constantly under scrutiny, trying to make this team great, and now even his own teammates are making it tougher for him. And this is the same guy, J.R. Smith, who said we have to stop making LeBron play hero ball. Well, here's how you could stop doing that: put a rebound up,
play
when you're
4 ball.
Feet away. Yeah. So it's it was very interesting. But again, I feel like what made LeBron a legend, bringing this championship to Cleveland, is now slowly killing him on the inside.
Oh, yeah.
And I feel like that's why there's no doubt, really, in my mind, in Sean's mind, that he's not going to be in Cleveland next year. But what does it mean for this finals? What if, even if he leaves Cleveland, what if he does lead this team past the Warriors? Do you look at this first game? They had a chance to take it 1-0. This whole debacle at the end of the game with J.R. Smith and then Tristan Thompson getting ejected for throwing an elbow to somebody, apparently. I mean, the whole thing around that was that Thompson made the comment after the game that he was attempting to defend a shot that shouldn't have been taken. The shot was being taken because the shot clock was running down, and really there's no rule that says just because you're up by 10 points, you don't have to shoot the ball when a shot clock violation's coming. Mm-hmm. He just shot the ball. I mean, what's the big deal? You don't have to get all mad. I mean, again, I don't think he should have been ejected. That was way too dramatic by the referee, especially because after he did it, like, he made the signal that Tristan was ejected, and then he stared at him for like 30 seconds. I don't understand why referees do that. Like,
you're gone, but let's have a staring contest.
Yeah, like, you've already ejected him. Don't sit there. Like, as he's walking to the scores table, he's like staring at him over his shoulder. Like, what are you trying to do to him? Just let him, let it be. But if LeBron somehow, some way, manages to take this team and lead this team, because he's going to have a performance like this every single game.
Every night.
He's going to have to be at least 40 points every single game for this team to even try to have a chance. I mean, look at the other two starters. Thompson only had 2 points the entire game, and Hill only had 7. So if you have your five starters, only three of which are in double digits, and one guy is way far out in front of everybody else, it's going to be basically it's the best player versus the best team. But the best player is going to need some kind of help, and he's just not getting it. I mean, the fact that he's led this team, this Cleveland team, to the finals after basically having a whole different team at the start of the year is impressive enough in itself. Mm-hmm. Because I'll tell you right now, LeBron's not on this team. They don't get past Indiana in the first round.
No.
No way they get past Indiana in the first round. LeBron is the reason they're there. He's also the reason that he's being driven crazy by all of his teammates.
He's losing his mind. No one's. It's honestly, put one person out there, take the rest of the team out, bam. There's your team.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
So it's I think the disconnect will always come between the because I think LeBron's the best player to ever play basketball. And I think this whole playoff run really cements that. I mean, win or lose this finals, the fact that he's carried this team like he has made him great. I think that the Jordan conversation will never go away, but I've watched LeBron become great. I didn't get to watch Michael. So this is why this will always be my feeling. I've watched LeBron become great.
I'll say what I said the other day. So Michael Jordan was in the first Space Jam, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he was the best at the time. Now we're making another Space Jam, and who do you think we grab? LeBron James, the best at the time.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt they're going to be the two greatest players to have played the game. It'll always be a discussion on who's better. But I think if LeBron can thrive in these finals – and if by some miracle he does take this Cleveland team to a championship, he no longer has anything to prove. I don't want to hear your championship conversations because Michael never took a team this off balance to a championship. But that's the show. So thank you so much for listening. Thanks to our winner, Nathan, for calling in. Congratulations, man. Happy early birthday again. Have fun. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at My2Spenceworth. You can follow Sean.
At that sound guy underscore Sean. There you go.
On Instagram, Twitter account coming soon from Mr. Sean Cloud. But that's the show. Thank you again for listening. Have a fun and safe weekend, everybody.
Peace.
Peace.
ESPN Radio 94.5 FM, KUUB FM, Sun Valley, Reno.